Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We just reached episode 90 last night. It releases, though, every single Tuesday at noon. You find it on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. Christian, what's happening, brother?
Oh, nothing much, Gabe. How are you doing?
I am doing well. You've been traveling lately? You've been having fun?
I have.
You had a bachelor party in Nashville. Before that, you were on the road at the beach. I'm headed to the beach this weekend. You're in St. Louis as well. You've been all over. Yeah, countrywide Christian.
Yeah, it's been a traveling summer, so I can't complain. But I know you're excited to hit the beach this weekend, unwind, relax a little bit with your pregnant wife. Sounds wonderful.
Yes, it's nice. Although the drive down there may not be as fun with a pregnant wife. I hope she's not listening right now, because I'll have to hear about this later.
Yeah, you just dug your own grave.
Yeah, no, but I don't know if she's listening. She hears enough of my voice. She hears enough.
Yeah, I know she doesn't listen to the podcast very much. So
yeah, she does sometimes. Depending on if I tell her, I bring her up off the top of the show.
Right,
but I've learned not to tell her anymore. So
yeah,
she just stays away from it. So she doesn't hear if I say anything bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you mentioned episode 90, so we're only a couple months away from 100.
Yeah, the Javon Curse, Julius Peppers. Julius Peppers, brand new Hall of Famer episode.
Yeah.
I love it.
We didn't brand it as that, but no. It's a good afterthought.
Let's get to Memphis basketball. UConn, the opening game in the Maui Invitational. That'll be their toughest game off the top of the schedule. You're going to have Mizzou. Then you're going to have UNLV. Then you're going to be traveling to the Bay Area playing San Francisco. Then you're going to have to go over the pond to Hawaii, and you're going to be playing UConn. What do you think about that matchup right this second, and the way the schedule is shaking itself out?
I mean, they could have gotten a more favorable draw. That's 100% sure. But at the same time, I know they're the back-to-back defending national champions, but this UConn team is a little bit more unproven and a little more unsettled than the last 2 years. I mean, they've lost a ton off of those two national championship teams. So I'm not saying I think UConn will be bad this year. I think Danny Hurley is a good enough coach, and I think they have a good enough roster that they're definitely still a contender for that title and should be in the discussion. But they're not as terrifying as they've been the past 2 years, at least not right now on paper. Of course, you know, by the time we get to January, February, they could be a locomotive again, but we'll see. So I don't think it's as scary as a matchup as it could have been if this was UConn last year or in 2022. But still, not a very easy matchup to start the Maui Invitational with, and it should be really interesting and a really good early season litmus test for where Memphis is at that point in the season.
They brought in Aiden Mahaney, UConn did, Terrace Reed from Michigan. They still have Alex Caravan, which is probably the best thing they did this offseason, keeping him on campus. Although, after two national championships, I think it was going to be hard to lose him ultimately. But you still have to fork over the requisite NIL money to keep guys like that on campus. But when you look at that team, they're, 12th in Bart Torvik's rankings. Memphis is 25th. Even after Memphis started 15-2 last year in the non-con, Bart Torvik never really gave them a high ranking. This year's different. Like, it feels like the predictive metrics really do favor Memphis a lot more than last year.
Yeah, and I think, obviously, Bart Torvik was on to something last year by not being high on Memphis, which in the moment seemed crazy, really, like with how well Memphis was playing, with the amount of top 25 teams that they had beaten. I think at one point they were, number 10 in the top 25 themselves. They looked like they could compete and, be a potential Sweet 16, Elite 18, like one of the best teams in the country. And I think what Bart Torvik and his metrics realize is that Memphis had some glaring weaknesses that had kind of been exposed, but not fully exposed, especially on the defensive end of the floor. And you don't really see those same deficiencies going into this season. So hindsight being 2020, it's not surprising. I know we were all really thrown off last year by that, and it felt kind of disrespectful, honestly, in the time with how well Memphis was playing. But there were holes in that team that I think if we would have dug a little bit deeper and looked a little more past how close we are to the situation with, being analysts that cover the University of Memphis and really look past it further, we probably could have been able to see some of the signs that were coming, but we missed them because they were 15-2. They were top 10 in the country. They had beaten, four or five top 25 teams. They had basically the best wins outside of Purdue in the country at one point in the season. So it was a big question mark why they weren't loved by the metrics last year. And this year I think you could have the opposite opinion and be like, why do the metrics love this team so much? But it's because they on paper at least, mesh well together. Defensively, they should be much more sound this year. I think there are a lot of reasons to like this team better, even if the name value isn't even close to what it was last year. Maybe the product on the floor, maybe what they're putting together and the chemistry of this team, I think is going to be what carries them through this season, not the name value, not the name brand, not the high-scoring guys. I think it's just going to be a really solid team that plays well together on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, now one thing that we talked about on the podcast last night, I think even in wins going into next year, we're going to think a little bit more critically about how the wins look, what did they show, what did they not show. You know what I mean? Because last year you ignored a lot of it because you're like, oh, they're 15-2. They're going into their, the rest of their conference slate. I know that some of these games have not looked great, but I think most of us were on the train of just keep winning and everything will handle itself. But, generally speaking, looking game to game, not all of them look the same. Not all of the wins look the same. So I think, going into this year, how much more critically do you think we're going to take every single game, even in wins, even in close wins, even in big wins? Feels like we're going to have to take it a lot more serious.
Yeah, I think it's necessary to a point. Now, speaking for me and you, will we take it too far? Probably. We will probably overanalyze the crap out of this season because we got burned really bad last year because we were, much like everybody else in the city, very much on the bandwagon of this is a really good team that some people are starting to come around to, but there's still people that don't believe when you look at the record, you look at everything else. But I think those people were analyzing a little bit deeper than we were on metrics and stuff. So I think we have to be, I don't even know if critical kind of carries a negative connotation, and I don't know if it has to be negative, but I think we're just going to look way more in-depth on every game.
Yeah.
And it might not be, let's say they play an early season game against an inferior opponent, and it's a really tight game, but Memphis squeaks out. That was a scenario that happened last year. And we were able to look past that because of some of the things that happened afterwards. And I think this year we might have a little bit more pause to say, okay, is that just a fluke? Did that team just play really well and Memphis didn't? Or is this a trend that we could continue to see throughout the season and this be what this team ultimately is? And unfortunately, last year it was. It wasn't just a couple of one-off close games against inferior opponents. There were deeper cracks in the armor of this team that we couldn't see that eventually showed themselves throughout the year. So I think 100% we have to be more critical, if you want to use that word. We have to be more critical. We have to be more in-depth and look at these things a little bit deeper to make sure, are we missing something? Is there something here that metrics are telling us or that our eyes are missing that we can key in on and say, this could potentially be a problem? And I think the reason I said on the podcast last night, and I think it still makes sense to me, is the reason we have to be more in-depth is because this is not a returning roster. This Yep. isn't a group that's played together. This is a completely new team. And I honestly think with like these platoon swap rosters that we're seeing more and more of in college basketball, I think we have to take things more on a game-by-game basis or month-by-month basis rather than just saying, oh, it was a fluke. They played well. Memphis didn't. They still won. That's all that matters. Because you get data on teams. Like, say a team's played together, the majority of the roster has been together for 2 or 3 years, you have a really good idea for what that team is, what they're good at, what they're not good at. And so the surprises are limited. But with a team that's almost entirely new starting lineups, new rotations, all these different things, it does have to be more on a game-by-game basis. There's Yep. not as much forgiveness in metrics or in the eye test. Because you haven't seen it before. This isn't a team that we've seen. We're going to have such a small sample size of this team that we have to be very in-depth and keep our eyes open across the board throughout the season.
Yeah, and you know what's nice, too, with a team that's sort of these platoon swap rosters that Penny Hardaway is sort of putting together. What's nice is he said he wanted to do this, but he ended up doing it. He scheduled a exhibition game against Alabama on October 28th. I think that's massive. I think that's something we're going to see a lot more of in college basketball. I think with this program in particular, we'll see a bunch of it. And I think there may be a couple of games like that every offseason.
Yeah, and piggybacking off of the point of these large rosters large roster swaps like you're talking about, is they get to see elite competition early in the season. It's not Christian Brothers and Lemoyne Owen and then let's jump in to a very difficult non-conference schedule. It's let's see where we are. Let's see some of our strengths. Let's get some of that data I was talking about. Where are we a little bit weak at? And you can see that and correct it at least a little bit before you get into the brunt of the non-conference schedule and eventually the conference schedule, rather than saying, man, those exhibition games look really good against those teams that are not good at all. And so we're kind of just good across the board. Like, I didn't really see too many weaknesses. No, you pretty much know from the opening night, you know, October 28th in an exhibition game against Alabama, you're going to know where you stand to an extent.
Yep.
And I think that's very, very good for a team that's never played together, never really played an organized game together. Instead of starting out against a D2 school or something like that, you're starting out against a top, 10, 15 team in the country with elite talent, and you say, okay, this is where we are right now, and we know what to work on and know what to improve. We know what that big game, elite level game environment could potentially feel like, at least on the floor, maybe not from a national perspective or from a fan standpoint because it's an exhibition game. But you know what those big games can look like, at least from a talent perspective, and I think that's huge for a team that's completely new.
When we look at this team and like try to sort of predict starters, PJ Haggerty, Tyrese Hunter, I'm sure will be starters. Dane Danger as a big, I'm sure will be starters. How are they going to fill in the rest of that roster? Colby Rogers, do you think he'll start? How do you think it all looks?
I think we'll probably see different looks if we're just going off of the history of Penny Hardaway and how he kind of manages rotations and rosters. I think, especially early in the season, and probably especially in that Alabama exhibition game, he'll be able to get different looks for, okay, how can we piece this together? I'm sure the coaching staff has a really good idea right now with how long these guys have been on campus, another huge advantage that Memphis hasn't really had the last couple of years. And so I think they'll have a good idea how to piece it together, who fits where. You know, we've got these core three or four that we feel really good about. Who plays? Who meshes best with them in the starting lineup? Who comes off the bench in the best manner? Who gives us that spark off the bench? So I think specifically that exhibition game against Alabama, I think we'll see probably some different roster combos that we may not see as much throughout the season. But once again, I think the biggest point to all of this is most of this team has been here since July.
Yep.
And that's huge. That is not something this team has had. It was a goal of Penny's that really sounded unrealistic at the moment. And we were like, I don't know how he's going to be able to do this. But for the most part, he was able to. And that gives him and this coaching staff such an advantage. And it's not technically an advantage because that's the norm. But for this team, for Penny Hardaway, it is an advantage because it hasn't happened over the last couple of years.
Yep. Now on to Memphis football. Feels like everything's trending in the right direction over there. They had their scrimmage in Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium on Saturday. I heard some good things about Mario Anderson Jr., about that offensive line. It seems like there's some give and take, so maybe the defense is going to be improved, but feels like it's all trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I told you last night on the podcast, this is the most confident I felt going into a season since I started covering Memphis football in whatever it was, 2018, 2019. And if you remember, there's some really good years sprinkled in there. But I just feel like even in those years, there were question marks. I mean, you want to go back to the Cotton Bowl season. The secondary was a huge question mark that year. And there was a couple of other position groups that it was like, okay, how is this going to pan out? And I know everything hasn't fully gotten sorted out yet. We don't know
exactly
who the first five on the field will be as far as the offensive line go. We don't know who's going to be the starters in the secondary. But I think they have so much quality depth in those two positions. You can rope defensive line in there as well. I think they have so much quality depth in those position groups that I'm not concerned about it. I don't look at the safety position because I know for especially like 2018, 2019, 2020, those years, a lot of years I went in and saying, okay, this safety position is going to be really weak. They've got some people out here that I think other teams can pick on. And I just don't see that, at least on paper, on surface level this year. I don't look at a specific singular position or an entire position group and go, okay, this could be a huge problem. I think they have the bodies there pretty much everywhere to be solid. And I think that's why we see so much steam for them nationally. I think it's why we've seen so much excitement for the Memphis football team locally, is because they really are just solid to really, really good. Everywhere. Ryan Silverfield and the coaching staff did a wonderful job of filling out this roster, even though they lost, you know, some big-time guys, you know, losing Davion Carter and McCollin Pounders and some of these other players that they lost. I think they did as good of a job as you could possibly ask of them to go fill those positions. Blake Watson going to the NFL and replacing him with Mario Anderson, like, you could not ask for much better than what this staff did in the offseason to replace production. And I think that on top of who's coming back, it just inspires a ton of confidence.
Yeah, now another thing that inspired a little bit of confidence, at least in the Group of Five rankings, maybe got me excited. And I know you have to take a little bit of a leap to get here because they're not in the conference. You're not going to play them this year. But Boise State ended up naming Maddox Madsen their starting quarterback. And five-star number one recruit, according to ESPN in 2023, Malachi Nelson's going to be the backup. He was supposed to be the heir apparent to Caleb Williams at USC, ends up transferring to Boise State. You just assume that he's going to start. It feels like that's a ceiling limit move by Boise State. But also, on the same token, you do have to question, you know, Malachi Nelson's readiness. Clearly, he wasn't ready to take over as the starting quarterback at Boise State.
Yeah, it was a strange development because I think most of us kind of just penciled in Malachi Nelson as the starter. I think 247 Sports, he was the number five overall quarterback coming out of high school, five stars, you mentioned, highly decorated, highly recruited. Ends up at USC, and you mentioned being the heir apparent to Caleb Williams. He was supposed to be the next one in line for this tremendous, insane run that Lincoln Riley has went on with quarterbacks, and it just clearly didn't pan out. And even if it didn't pan out at USC, the expectation was, okay, he'll go, you know, he's taking a step down, he's going to Boise State, he'll be able to lock that job up relatively easy and could have an incredible year at Boise State. And obviously that is not the case. He was beat out by Maddox Madsen. And I'm sure Maddox Madsen has played really well to win that job. But as you said, it is a ceiling-limiting move because Maddox Madsen's ceiling is not at the height of Malachi Nelson's, regardless of how he plays. I mean, the expectations of a five-star quarterback are off the charts high. I mean, you're supposed to be one of the best players in college football one day, and to not have that potential, to have the arm, you know, the arm strength that he has, the things that he did at the high school level, to not have the potential of him reaching that ceiling, I think it definitely holds Boise State back. Now, can they still be a really good team? Can Maddox Madsen do a great job of leading that team and potentially sure. getting them where they want to go? Sure, but I just don't – they're not as scary. How about that? They don't seem as scary without Malachi Nelson as their starting quarterback.
Yeah, and there's two ways this could have gone. Maddox Madsen could have been just that damn good, maybe one of the best quarterbacks in the country, best quarterbacks certainly in the group of five, or it was just Malachi Nelson not being up to snuff. And I think as a, you know, a 19-year-old having to learn a couple of offenses that early, I think that, you know – if I'm breaking into it as a football player, having seen a bunch of quarterbacks come and go at the University of Memphis, I think that's sort of what I look at. Maybe learning two different offenses in two different years was a little bit too much for him, at least in this season coming up.
Yeah, and those are really high expectations to switch teams and then immediately be the starter of the team and the quarterback that's supposed to lead them to a college football playoff berth. I likened it kind of to Dante Moore, who started his
right.
career at UCLA as a five-star also and is now at Oregon, transferred to Oregon. And for him, he doesn't have that pressure. Yes, he's got the five-star caliber. He was incredible at the high school level, showed a lot of flashes at UCLA, made an upward move going from UCLA to Oregon, but he gets to sit behind Dillon Gabriel. And that is a huge thing to him to have that year to learn offense, to learn how to be a top-tier college football quarterback from Dillon Gabriel. And Malachi Nelson does not have that. Now, did he choose where he went? Absolutely. Like, he obviously went to Boise State expecting to start, wanting to start. That was the whole motivation. When Dante Moore went to Oregon and said, you know what, give me this year, let me sit behind Dillon Gabriel, really own in on my craft, own in on the offense, and be ready to go during the 2025 season. So I know those players are closely tied together. They played in the same year in high school, five-star quarterbacks, both transferred. And we see two very different stories. And it kind of makes you wonder, like, did Malachi Nelson make the wrong decision? Should he went somewhere where he could have sat a year? Or is he just not as good as people thought he was going to be? So there are obviously a lot of question marks there. And who knows? We'll see what happens. But I think it's good news for Memphis that Malachi Nelson did not win the starting job.
You've been thinking it's a three-horse race at the group of five to get that college football playoff spot, and it's Liberty, Boise State, and Memphis. Did this do anything to like make you think about other teams? Or is that still the way you think?
That's still the way I think. I still have my question marks about Boise State now with Maddox Madsen being the quarterback, and I just am curious what that looks like. If he comes out and lights the world on fire, then okay. But if he's just decent, then we'll see where we stand on Boise State. But to me, the reason there's only three that really stick out right now is because I just don't see the as obvious upside with some of the other schools, with the UTSAs of the world, with the Tulanes of the world. I don't see the obvious upside there. And I think there are a lot more question marks for those teams than there are for Boise State, Liberty, and Memphis. And we'll see. I mean, Tulane, I would say, is probably the closest to me, but it'll be a new quarterback. It'll be a new coach there. So there's a lot of changes there where it gives you pause to say, let me see the product on the field before I start taking leaps and bounds and saying this team has a chance to compete for that college football playoff spot. So there are every year in college football, there are going to be surprises, whether it's a team as a whole, a quarterback, a coaching staff, whatever it may be, there are probably going to be surprises. There's probably a team out there that we're not talking about right now that's going to be in contention for that spot. But at least on paper, those are the only teams right now that I'm willing to say I feel like can potentially do it.
Yeah. Now, final thing for Christian Fowler, at C. Fowler, BCM, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. We also have a podcast called the On the Bluff Podcast. Releases every single Tuesday at noon. Find it on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. Now, flag football in the 2028 Olympics. I know we just wrapped up the 2024 Olympics, but the NFL and the NFL Players Association just announced that they're going to try to get as many NFL players involved in the flag football at the 2028 Olympics in L.A. as they possibly can. We did have a quarterback by the name of Daryl Doucette, who is the USA flag football quarterback as of right now. He said he felt it was disrespectful that these NFL players are just assuming that they're going to be a part of this team. And then what I tell to Daryl is like, dude, you're 5'8", 140. We have guys in the NFL by the name of Patrick Mahomes, Caleb Williams, Josh Allen that probably can do a whole lot better given the opportunity that you've been afforded over the years.
Yeah, I mean, okay, from his perspective, I understand it feeling disrespectful because that's your spot. You're the starting quarterback for the USA flag football team. But the reason that they're not the starting quarterback for the USA football team is because they play on Sundays every week and they compete for Super Bowl. Like, like I said, once again, his perspective, I'm sure he feels disrespected. But at the same time, like, you have to look around and say, okay, I'm good at this, my niche role, I'm good at it. But there are a lot of people that can do it better and a lot of people that will do it better. I mean, just look at it. It makes too much sense for it to be an NFL player and not the quote unquote starter for the USA flag football
right.
team. And once
right.
again, I mean, the only argument I think you can keep coming back to is there's a reason they're not the starter for the flag football team. You know, like I said, Patrick Mahomes, a 3-time MVP and a Super Bowl champion, all these things, like, they're way better. And you have to know that. Like, in your head, you can't be like, well, they might be good in the NFL, but I'm a better flag football quarterback. It's like, no, that's absurd. They're the best in the world for a reason. That's what the Olympics are for, to put the best in the world out there. And every single one of us wants to see Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and
sure.
Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb and all these guys absolutely dominate the rest of the world in the 2028 Olympics, which is exactly what will happen if NFL players end up playing in the Olympics. It won't even be close. It'll be probably worse than any basketball
right.
that we've ever seen with NFL players in the flag football.
Yeah, and then also Daryl Doucette in his sort of sour grapes message that he gave to the NFL players, he basically said, well, they haven't helped grow this game. And it's like, well, are we really separating flag football and 7-on-7s
right,
and from football
right.
in general? That seems
yeah.
like a ridiculous stretch. As Kobe once put it, a Bikram yoga stretch. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is the only reason there is flag football is because of those guys. So let's not get it twisted. And you're not getting flag football fans that aren't also college football and or NFL fans. Like, you got to realize the hierarchy of it. And flag football is not anywhere near the top. And the only reason that game exists is because of the NFL. Like, that's it. Point ended, done. It's just, once again, I'll say it again. I understand he probably feels very disrespected. But he has to be honest with himself and look at the situation for what it is. Only reason there's flag football is because of the NFL, and the only reason those guys aren't dominating flag football is because they're in the NFL making millions and millions of dollars.
Right, and they haven't had this opportunity to play it at the Olympics. And I do give him credit, and the rest of the flag football players around the world, they have been able to get to the point where this is an Olympic sport, and I do tip the cap. But I think if you want this sport to go into hyperdrive, if you want it to, you know, continue to grow, getting the best players out there is the best way to do that. People will watch. People will care. People will latch onto it. So,
100%.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. But, Christian, I appreciate it, man. We'll do this again next week.
Yes, sir. I'll see you next week.
Yes, sir. That's Christian Fowler at C. Fowler BCM, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. And make sure you listen to our podcast, On the Bluff. Releases every single Tuesday at noon. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. Now, I want to pick up this conversation right where we left off because the NFL and NFLPA have decided that they're going to find all the avenues possible to let NFL players play in the 2028 LA games for the USA flag football team. Who do we want to see on that team? What's it going to look like? We'll talk about that next. 92.9 FM ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories.
Overloading the line.
A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
Always remember that the Blitz is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. Connor, what we got today?
Oklahoma State to wear QR codes linked to NIL funds on
helmets.
Okay, and it's right on their back stripe.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be very interesting to see. Now, I like on the surface, this is wild to me. Like, Ollie Gordon has a 25-yard carry, and then everybody's going to go get his QR code and give him a tip for that play. Like, that's wild to me. Somebody scores a touchdown, lays a good block, you can immediately go in there and send them money. It's just weird on the surface of it. But then I thought back to my day, and if I would have laid a good block, got out in front of a screen, knocked someone on their ass, I would have absolutely wanted someone to go donate to me. This is completely different than anything we've ever seen in the past. But these are different times. I got to be honest with you. I know there's some people that have a massive issue with it just because it is like strict pay for play. And it's almost like you're tipping these guys for making good plays. But, you know, there's an added motivation for these guys. And, you know, we're paying them every which way. So why not this way? That's where I'm at this particular moment.
So I understand that because you're coming from a player's perspective and you're like, yeah, man, you know, I was laying down a couple yeah. really good blocks. People yeah. saw me.
I have a nice reach block to get Daryl Henderson to the second level.
Sure.
Come on.
Sure. At the same time, though, I think this is a really slippery slope.
Sure.
And I have some uncomfortability about it. I am a, you know, very pro pay the players type of person. But when it comes to paying them live during the games with QR codes on the back of their helmets, that's where it gets a bit tricky with me. However, I think that we do need just some more details on this, because is it one of those things where it's going to a fund that is spread across all players, or is it going
to
a certain player?
Got to be straight to the player, right?
If it's straight to a player, then that is really...
That's what it seems like. You have your own QR code on the back of your helmet. Or maybe it's... I have not been able to, like, decipher if it just goes straight to the NIL fund. But it sounds like you just get to sort of, like, throw tips at these guys, basically, if they make a big play. Well, can I say this, though?
It's saying that it's linking to the donation page for the school's NIL
fund.
It's like
maybe,
so it must
maybe
be going
overarching.
To a pool. Which, that makes me feel a little bit better.
What is kind of interesting, though... Is of all the coaches that you would expect to sign off on this, for this to like go through, Mike Gundy feels like one of the last guys that would do something like this. Something so out there, you know, strict pay for play. Like, I almost got to tip the cap to him a little bit, even though I don't want to say like, okay, he's going out of his way to try to help his players and try to get the money lining their pockets. You know, this is not the first coach I would expect to do something like this. I would look at like Dan Lanning or like Marcus Freeman, like these guys that have latched on to NIL and certainly won it. Oklahoma State hasn't been quite the same, even though they have a lot of money lining their pockets, especially in the Big 12 now. They should be a team sort of at the top of the Big 12 every single year with the remade edition of it. But like I'm impressed, to be honest with you, that Mike Gundy was the guy who to first sign off on something like this.
It's very interesting because last week Gundy went after the distractions of the NIL
right.
era. This is actually what he had to say. He said, we have to have those conversations with the players. Tell your agent to quit calling us and asking
yes.
for more money.
Because he said it's locked in now.
Negotiable now. It'll start again in December. So now we're able to direct ourselves just in football. And that's part of the fun. So I will say that maybe he's in favor of this because it's kind of a, you know, indirect way to help make money in NIL, and you're getting your players paid, but you don't necessarily have to deal with the agents or deal with new deals. It's just, hey, you know, people that are watching the games, they get to do this directly. So I actually don't have to do any extra work for this. So
yeah.
maybe that is why he is in favor of it.
But here's the other part of it just in general, and we've been having this discussion for a while, whether it's the Pitbull Stadium and at Florida International, where they allow Pitbull, the artist, to pay for the stadium naming rights. We are just exploring every single possible option to try to get these guys money and try to get as many donations as possible. Exploring all these different revenue streams.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners. The road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
I think when we talk about a slippery slope, the slippery slope you're talking about, Connor, that's a slippery slope I'm talking about that I feel is a little bit scary, because we could head down and take some very unreasonable, scary money, right? Like, we know that the PGA Tour and the Saudis are in bed with each other at this point. Like, I just wonder where this ends. We're talking about private equity as well in college football. I just wonder where this ends, because everybody, every program is trying to get as much money as possible, and they may explore some sort of shady routes to go get that money to keep themselves in the fight.
How long do you think it's going to take for other schools to do this?
I don't know. I think they're going to, if I was another school, I'd wait and see. I'd step back, let them do it, see how it all works out, and then go down that path if it works out well.
Let me ask a new question. What's the number? What's the number that's going to make people go, oh, we got to do this? Is it 50?
I don't know.
50,000? 100,000?
I think 100,000 would probably be that number. But I don't know. I think there's some smaller schools that just look at it and they're like, damn, maybe we should do this anyway.
I mean, it's kind of passive fundraising.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's why I understand the concept of it, and I actually do think that it's a good idea. It's just the implications of it for the future is what scares me.
Like, the idea, and I see a lot of people putting this, like,
it's like
tweet
AI.
Out.
I'm like, listen, I understand
tweet,
it, but we're not going to apply it the correct ways.
The tweet,
I don't trust
the meme,
us.
The social media post, it's like, you know, people are putting it out there. Ollie Gordon runs for 25 yards, and there's a tip screen, 15, 20%, 25%, no tip, and then you sign off on it.
Not for alcohol.
That's kind of what this is. Yeah, definitely not for alcohol with Ollie Gordon after that DUI. But, yes, that's what it feels like, right? That's what it feels like. Like, people are not being ridiculous when they put out sort of the tweets and the memes and the funny posts about that. That is what this is. Somebody makes a good play, and you're basically tipping them for their good play. A little strange. We'll see how it works out.
We talked about it a little bit yesterday, but the NFL and the NFLPA are working to allow players to compete in flag football during the 2028 Olympics. High-profile players such as Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, Tyreek Hill, and Caleb Williams have already expressed interest in participating in the games.
Ooh, Darryl Doucette, 5'8", 140, the USA flag football quarterback. He said it was disrespectful that all these guys think they can just get involved even though they didn't help grow the game, even though they did grow the game, because football, flag football go hand in hand. And then also, when they get involved, the game will grow exponentially because people will want to tune in to see Patrick Mahomes slinging the ball downfield to Tyreek Hill. But Darryl Doucette's definitely not going to take this the right way. But I think all of us take this the right way. We're excited. We want to see how this all works out. And we want to see, you know, these NFL players participate in flag football. Now, this is what here's my question. Who are the guys that we want to see get involved immediately? Starting quarterback, backup quarterback of Patrick Mahomes, Caleb Williams, really like. I think that makes a whole lot of sense. They got
Hurts
some legs.
Hurts is already in the commercial, though.
Well, Hurts, you know, that would be an interesting one, too. But, like, I think all of those guys have some legs
yeah.
to move around, because there is a rush at a certain point. I think there's a counted rush. You know, it's like you're playing backyard football where you say, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, then you come after them. So these guys can use their legs, get into scramble drill, make some things happen, although I don't think they'll need to get into scramble drill. Can you imagine, like, Tyreek Hill lined up against the corner from Italy? Good God, he's going to burn him. He's going to run directly past him. But let's talk about the guys who we would want. At quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, no doubt. Then you have a couple of wide receivers, right? I think I would go, just based on skill set, Let's go Justin Jefferson and Tyreek Hill. You have a speedster and you have a separator and a really good route runner.
Man, right? What Let's a difficult that. Decision that was for
Let's
you.
Let's do that.
Yes.
So you have a center as well that snaps the ball and then gets out of there. And I think sort of most people do like a bigger guy who's got some legs. I think you could go Travis Kelce, but I'm going to go a different route with this. I'm going to say Sam Laporta.
I like Laporta.
Young guy.
Younger.
Pretty fast. Can move his feet. I like Sam Laporta there. And then at back, this is going to be a really – it's kind of a tough discussion because I think there's a lot of different backs that you would like. And obviously, you're pass catching. So I think my first one would be Christian McCaffrey. But if you go Saquon Barkley, I'm not going to be mad at you in the slightest.
Kyren Williams wouldn't be bad either. He'd be all right.
Compared to those two guys, who would he
I don't know. He was top three rusher last year.
You're
quick.
But also.
Honestly, Daryl would be.
You need more of a pass catcher right back.
Calvin Austin is a slot guy.
You need more. That'd be kind of fun. Him blazing a 4-3 past Italy defenders. That'd be great. But I think you need more of a pass catcher at the running back position. I don't know if Kyren Williams fits that. So let's go Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley.
If you say so, we'll go with them. If you say so.
But also at wide receiver, do you want like a big, tall?
I'm thinking like a DK Metcalf needs to be in there.
Good luck. Good luck. Physicality, speed. He might punch somebody out there, though. We know that
there are no helmets for him to swing.
He's got a little bit of a short temper, and he's already swung some helmets at people.
No helmets and no helmets in flag football.
But he's got hands.
He does have hands.
So that is true. We have to be careful with that. But yeah, I mean, if you want to switch it up, throw DK Metcalf in there. Are there any other wide receivers that sort of fit that bill?
I mean, CD's bigger.
6'2".
He's a bigger guy. AJ Brown's pretty big.
Oh, that would be a good one.
Super physical.
That's a really good one.
Mike Evans.
Ooh.
Retirement tour. Go get that gold.
He'll be pretty old by then.
Oh, that's true. It's 2028. I keep thinking like right now.
Because he's in his 30s already.
That's another thing that we have to consider is it's going to be in 2028.
I think most. Well, so Tyreek Hill may be older, but he's still also going to run.
But is McCaffrey still going to be McCaffrey in 2028? Oh, Gabe, we need to like reset. We got to rewind the clock a second here. Okay. We did this with the idea of like right now, guys. We've got to think about it.
I have the back. I have a great back. Jahmyr Gibbs.
Yeah, I think that's a good answer. That's a very good answer.
Running a 4-3, catching the ball out of the backfield.
I would still want Mahomes. I think the quarterbacks you can still keep.
Sure.
Those guys, especially Caleb Williams. But now we have to think younger players.
On the up and up. Sam Laporta definitely fits.
Nico Collins? Laporta definitely fits.
I could rock with Nico Collins.
A.J. Brown is still pretty young.
By the time we get around to it, Malik Nabers could be one of the best wide receivers.
Rome
Odunze. And then also Marvin Harrison Jr. We'll keep an eye on him, even though he's under the radar because he plays for the freaking
Puka?
Arizona Cardinals.
Is Puka?
I don't know.
We got to see it again.
I have to see it again. I really do.
Michael Pittman Jr.? He'll still be around.
Next.
No. Chris Olave? No.
Yeah,
I'm trying to just think of younger guys. Devontae Smith?
Okay.
Burner?
That could be one. Really good route runner.
Yeah.
I could see that. But yeah, we do have to sort of shift our thinking here. And like at the center position for those tight ends, Travis Kelce probably a no.
He'll be retired.
George Kittle probably a no. It's got to be Sam Laporta, guys like that. TJ Hockenson, somebody like that maybe. Yeah, we have to definitely shift our thinking because in 4 years, these guys could definitely hit themselves
back
out of the game.
I can't believe we didn't say this. Bijan Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
Bijan over Jahmyr. Yeah, I'm definitely going Bijan.
I think that's closer than you think.
Don't you dare.
I think it's
closer
than you think.
You know how I feel about Bijan Robinson.
I know you feel
Don't
great about him.
Dare.
I think it's closer than you think, man. I really do.
How dare you?
Jahmyr is a stud. That's not me hating on Bijan Robinson. But who had a better rookie year? And I know what you can say. Arthur Smith didn't use Bijan the right way. But who had a better rookie year? Jahmyr Gibbs. Jahmyr Gibbs had a better rookie year.
But Bijan had more highlights.
but Bijan was on House of Highlights more, man. ESPN socials were posting it
you
more.
You saw that juke.
Yeah. So it'll be fun regardless, though. And I'm excited for it. I really am. I think most people want to see USA wide receivers run 4-3s past the rest of the world. Who else do you think is going to be able to compete in flag football? Like
countries?
Yeah.
Canada will probably be able to put together a team.
True.
Mexico, I think, will probably be able to put together a team. Honestly, I don't know. I don't know where is it played. I don't know where it is played in the rest of the world.
I mean, New Zealand, everybody's starting
Australia.
To pick it up. Like, Germany has their own league now. Like, people are starting to pick up American football, you know? So it's like...
The English, probably.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. But I think here in North America is where you sort of have to look at who's going to be the best. Canada, United States,
Listen,
Mexico.
We cannot have a 3-on-3 basketball situation here. We need to beat people 100-0.
Yes.
We haven't even talked about the defensive players.
Who cares?
Honestly, yeah, who cares?
Just run it up. I don't give it. Sauce Gardner, sure. Do you need a linebacker? Maybe Fred Warner? I don't know. Something like that. I think this all works out. I think this all works out. We don't need to worry about defense, though. We're just going to put up 100 on everybody. Now, we need to go ahead and transition up out of here, and we need to go ahead and wrap up this edition of the Gabe Kuhn Show with the Rewind. Right here, next, 92.9 FM ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.